Movie, film, 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 hope you got your seatbelt buckled and you're ready to ride. You're listening to
Movie Film. It's the podcast where we pick a flick and decide if it's a movie or a film.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Nate. And three tomatoes are walking down the street. Papa Tomato, Mama Tomato, and Baby Tomato. Baby Tomato starts lagging behind, and Papa Tomato gets really angry, goes back and squishes him and says, "Catch up."
And I'm Terrell, and I'm happy to disappoint you.
I don't know what the quote is.
Is yours from, Pulp Fiction?
Correct.
Okay, but I who says it? Is it? Oh, it's Bruce Willis, right?
Nah, Mia Wallace.
Oh, you're right. It is Mia.
Wallace, Willis, pretty close.
mine's is from Aliens.
Hey, we just watched that.
We just watched it.
But we're not talking about it.
No, we are not going to talk about it, guys.
We are doing our top 10s of 2020.
Yeah, we're gonna wrap it up the best we can. It's been a weird year for movie releases. And so we're just going to do what we've seen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like every list I make is usually
movies
I've seen.
True.
But I didn't see Mandy in 2018, so it wasn't on my top 10 list.
Yeah, it wasn't on my
Might have been. I don't know.
Yeah, gotta look back at that list. Yeah.
No going back. before we talk about Mandy.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about 2020for the last time, hopefully.
probably not.
Actually, we should probably talk about this year more so we don't repeat our mistakes.
Yes.
Maybe not on this podcast.
Yeah.
Mine is in alphabetical order. Okay. I have 10.
Okay. I have 10 as well. 10 of the best things I've seen. Do you want to start or I'll start? You know what? I'll start.
Okay.
Okay, so first up on my list, in no order, is The Sound of Metal. Sound of Metal made my top 10. I just loved it. we spoke about it on a few episodes ago, and we just talked about the sound design, and we talked about the performances, and we just talked about what that picture was able to do and how I don't know about you, but it just really drew me in into the world that it was trying to create and the story that it was trying to tell in a way that a lot of films don't play with their sound that way. And so I appreciated it. I appreciated the way I'm sorry, just do a tiny bit of spoiling. Just how loud it started off and then just how quiet it ended.
Mm.
Yeah. So.
It's interesting that with your random order, you started with Sound of Metal, because although that did not make my top 10, I am going to list off some, honorable mentions, and it is included there.
Okay.
But, my number one in alphabetical order is another movie that has very creative use of sound design called The Assistant. This one is not about someone experiencing deafness. It's an assistant in a Hollywood production office. Maybe New York, actually. I think she's in the New York office. And it is a... There were a couple movies in 2020 that tried to deal with the aftermath of the Me Too movement from a couple years ago. This one, I think, dealt with it the most adeptly. It essentially is about Harvey Weinstein's assistant, but they recast the Harvey Weinstein character. You don't actually see him, you just hear him. With these a lot of phone calls. It's just a day in the life, and the sound design is that, and the performance from Julie Garner are the two things that really stand out for me with that movie. The sound design does this thing where they really keep it so close to the one character that they're following, the titular assistant, that you just hear murmurs and whispers, and it's what would it be like to be complicit in just the terrible shit that goes on in these rooms,
right?
In these systems. And that is streaming on Hulu for anyone that wants to check it out.
Nice. Next up, I have, in no order, Monsoon. Now, Monsoon is a tricky one because it says 2019.
That's half of mine.
Yeah. Same thing's going to happen next year with 2021. It's going to say 2021, or it's going to say 2020 and 2021. It's really like weird. But I have Monsoon, which is just this very happy gay tale of a man going back to his homeland in Vietnam. I also spoke about this a little on the podcast as well. Goes back to, you know, see what his life was like, because he doesn't remember what his life could have been like if he stayed in Vietnam, and just all that self-discovery that comes with it while also being gay and finding love, you know, with an American who is also dealing with his own identity as an American being in Vietnam and having to face the realities of the war, even though he didn't have anything to do with it. And I like the story to tell, and I really appreciate a nice, happy gay ending.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to depart from my alphabetical order now, because I found a... I'm just going to... My ones are just going to be in response to yours. Because,
okay.
speaking of Vietnam, I have Five Bloods on my list.
Ooh, okay.
For some Vietnam representation. Not mm-hmm. really. Americans in Vietnam representation. Mm-hmm. This was, of course, the Spike Lee Netflix movie that came out years ago, which happened to be this year.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a big year for me watching Spike Lee movies. He was my most watched director by far.
Mm-hmm.
Watched Brilliant. Over 20 of his works.
Awesome.
And I think his one narrative feature this year, he did the David Burns American Utopia. I saw that on a lot of lists. I don't know. The audience in that performance really irked me. But The Five Bloods is not a live performance piece. It's a movie. And it reminds you that it's a movie,
mm-hmm.
like every like couple scenes, something will be like, oh, okay, yeah, I remember Apocalypse Now, or I haven't seen it, but apparently a lot of references to the treasure of, oh, what's that movie called? San Madre.
Hmm.
That's not the right name. this was... Well, I guess we had Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. But, like, this one really does a good job of unintentionally eulogizing Chadwick Boseman, since the core characters are dealing with his death.
Yeah.
He was the fifth blood.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just an epic.
It is an epic.
It's an epic. I rewatched it after Chadwick passed, and it hit different.
Mm-hmm.
And Delroy Lindo for Best Actor.
Yes. Yes, Delroy for Best Actor. Don't forget it. I know it came out in the summer, but do not overlook that man, all right? The Five Bloods is next on my list as well. So it is a really phenomenal peek into like PTSD for Black men who went to fight in a war that, you know, they had no business being over there. And when they came back home, there was nothing for them. And it was just like, what do I do? And, you know, and it's just not like a Black soldier experience with PTSD. It's every soldier experience with PTSD. But when you're Black and you are from a, a poor neighborhood, it becomes that hill is steeper, you know. And it was really beautiful and interesting to see the conversation around Black men and mental health. And there's that one scene in it, and I didn't talk about it the last time, but there's that one scene that really like struck a chord with me, is when they're in the boat after he gets into that argument with the merchant.
Yeah.
And they all circle him and they like mm-hmm. hold him together.
Yeah.
And they're talking about, you know, like, are you seeing anyone? Like, you need to, like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? And I was just like, wow, okay. I don't I can't recall seeing something like this. And talking about mental health, especially in the Black community, is very, very important, because a lot of it is just like, you know, go to church, pray it away. You know what I mean? You got demons or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But like, no, like you need to like talk about it, or that stuff is just going to haunt us. And it was haunting his character until it became his demise eventually. And I really appreciated it. So yeah, it made my top 10.
Well, I don't have anything to connect to that since I just said it. Yeah, so I'll circle back to my B entry, which is Bacurau.
Ooh, okay.
We said we're not going to talk about movies we watched this week, but I showed you Bacurau this week.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
No, it was like last week.
Oh, so wait, did we talk about it last
week? We did.
Okay, so we talked about it last week. this Brazilian spaghetti western. Just awesome shit.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I remember talking about Obama liking it.
Yeah.
And I did mention that it would be on this list, and it is.
It is. It's also on my list. So go ahead.
Oh, should I speak more about it?
I don't know.
We just did it last week. one of those cool movies that really shifts in genre and tone throughout pretty seamlessly, and I like the, there's another movie on here that also takes like elements of the Western genre, but uses that to completely dismantle, like the tropes of Westerns and like,
and the image of it.
The cowboy comes in to kill all the Indians and claim his land because manifest destiny.
Yeah.
But no, this is fuck those cowboys.
Yeah. Fuck that shit.
Yeah.
I spoke about it last week. I was very excited to talk about it. It is, it's beautiful. It's violent, and it deals with grief, and it has some really great performances in it. And it just gets to a place that you want it to get. And it's just so satisfying to watch because, you know, Americans are fucking just, you know, it is such a great picture of just like the white man's ego, right? And so this movie takes that. It takes all that manifest destiny, all that privilege, and all that anger, and all of that, and it just was just like, no, you don't have a right to this shit at all. You don't.
Yeah.
And like they're so arrogant, and they're dumb, and they're stupid, and you're watching it, and you're just like, oh man, they have no idea what they're doing, and they're going against people that know what they're doing, and it's great when they finally are able to like flip it, you know what I mean? Because you're watching it, and you're just like, oh no, like please, like. What am I going to be in store for? And then it just has like, it feels like almost like a Tarantino moment. You know what I'm talking about? Like when he's, I won't spoil it, but when he's going to turn that corner, you know, when it's the two of them, he turns that corner, and then
I know the shot you're talking about.
The shot I'm talking about. Yes.
Yeah.
Very pleasing.
Okay, so my next pick, continuing alphabetically, but also one that deals with grief and violence, is a documentary called Dick Johnson is Dead, where the documentarian Kirsten Johnson films her father, who was just at the beginning of a descent into Alzheimer's. Like at the beginning of that road where he still has a lot of mental capacity. He agrees to star in his daughter's documentary where she's going to film him in various death scenarios. So she gets to process her father's death while he's still alive. And just, I haven't seen a movie deal with death in the way that this one does. And for it to be a documentary, but to blend elements of fiction and nonfiction, I found very meaningful. And yeah, I mean, we're all gonna die, so let's talk about it and figure out how to be okay with that, right?
Yeah.
Instead of just trying to run away from the inevitable.
Exactly.
It's on Netflix.
Awesome. I think you spoke about this before earlier in the year. I remember you bringing it up. Nice. Next on my list is the 40-year-old version.
Hey.
It's probably on your list too.
Shh.
The 40-year-old version is just this late bloomer coming of age story of a woman who's not 40.
Yeah, she's 39.
She's 39, guys.
She was probably 40 when she made it, though.
Probably. And it's just, you know, a struggling artist who just has to come to terms with whether she's a success or not. And, you know, her mother, losing her mother. Mm. And I guess, I don't think she's trying to follow in her mother's footsteps, but she is trying to. That influence is on her,
mm-hmm.
you know? And it's a romance story of an older woman, which is nice to see. So yeah, it's just really sweet New York tale. It's like a New York fairy tale. I won't say fairy tale.
Yeah, I don't.
Yeah,
I wouldn't.
It's a New York tale, but it's very New York, and I liked it a lot.
And I guess that leads me to the 40-year-old version.
Hey,
which is on my top 10. I talked about watching a bunch of Spike Lee movies. This is interesting to get that background before watching this one, so I could be like, oh,
yeah,
do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. And other Spike Lee-isms.
Yes.
So that was interesting. What else can I say about it?
It's very funny.
Yeah, very funny. For the first time filmmaker to star, write, direct her own movie.
Heavy lifting.
I'm so excited to see what was her rap name? Rod Optimus? No.
Rod Optimus Prime?
Yeah, something ridiculous. I'm excited to see what Rod O'Blank does next.
Yeah.
And I would urge anyone who hasn't watched the 40-year-old version to do so, because of all the movies on my list, it's like the only feel-good movie.
Oh.
It's like the only one that gives you like a warm feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout.
Nice. My list has a few warm feelings, speaking of which.
Those are the movies I like the most, but they didn't make my top 10.
Next up on my list, speaking of warm feelings, we just did it last week, is Jingle Jangle. Jingle Jangle makes my list.
Never heard of it.
It's a Christmas movie.
Never heard of it.
Never heard of
What's
it.
What's Christmas?
What? True. Yeah, I mean, we spoke about it last week. I don't have much to say about it. Listen to last week's episode where I broke down and cried and just gushed over it and just fell into, you know, the magic of it, and the experience and the feeling and the joy that it gave me. It was, like I said, it was a really nice bow on top of a really odd year. And so yeah, Jingle Jangle makes the list.
Cool. Well, that movie has dancing, and another movie that's on my list that has
segues.
Just trying to make this as seamless as it can be, is another one of those 2019 releases, which I think like it showed once at a festival.
Yeah.
In 2019. It's not even like out for, like, people can't even watch it. I had to go to some different avenues to watch it.
Some alleyways.
But it is called Ima, and it is a Chilean film. I'm calling it a film. I wanted to do this on the podcast a couple months ago, but I couldn't find a way to watch it with the subtitles on our projector. Mm-hmm. So we had to scrap that.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's a movie or a film. We might have to find out next year. Okay. Because I rewatched it today and I love it. I mean, I loved it the first time I watched it. It's so fucked up. And
is that what you were laughing at?
Maybe.
Okay.
Or Mandy.
Okay.
I was definitely laughing at Mandy.
Okay.
It is about a dance. I don't even know if I want to say what it's about.
Mm.
I don't want to say what it's about. Okay. If you like movies that have, like, intense imagery and also, like, fucked up social dynamics, watch it.
Okay.
I had a completely different experience on the second time watching it, which is amazing. It's one of those movies where you see it through one lens and then the end happens and you're like, oh, fuck, that's what I was watching?
Interesting.
But not in like a loud way where it's like, this was actually this or it was a dream.
Okay.
Just like character motivations aren't clear throughout it. And then when it becomes clear.
Okay.
Yeah.
Dope. Yeah, you're really selling me on this.
Yeah, I like it.
Okay. Next on my list, in no order,
right,
is Soul.
Mm.
What is Soul?
What?
It's Pixar, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so Pixar Soul.
What's so funny?
I don't know. I don't know. I just can't stop laughing now. Soul is a 2020 animated Pixar movie about a jazz musician who pretty much has to discover the meaning of life through death. And that is not a spoiler because that is in the trailer. Really funny.
He dies nine minutes into
it, which is funny because I was showing it to my mom and she was like, I was telling her what's going to happen. She was like, wait, what? He's going to die? Like, she couldn't, like, you know, grasp that concept. And as she was saying it, I was like, Mom, pay attention to the screen. And then he died. And she was like, wait, what? Like, go back. It was so funny. But yeah, it's really sweet. It's really nice. I feel like they have, like, all these, like, really, like, adult themes, like these really like heavy concepts and like not heavy messages in their movies. And just because it's animated and it seems like it's geared towards kids, you go in there thinking that you're just gonna have a great time, and then when you walk out of the theater or out of your living room, you have tears running down your face because you're just like, I was not expecting to ponder the meaning of my life at this moment in time in front of everyone. It is really well designed. It's really well designed. Really well sound design. Really great music. And just really great story. I will say Tina Fey, not my favorite part of it.
She's a big part of it.
And she's a big part of it. And I understand that 22 does not have a race. At all. But, you know, you dropped some names and then I thought of some names of people, of voices I would have rather it had been. And yeah, I would have rather.
What if it was also Jamie Foxx?
What if it was also Jamie
Foxx? He's very talented. Right? He could do that.
He could do two voices.
An old soul and a young soul.
You said Wanda Sykes. I was like, what if it was Wanda Sykes?
I love her voice.
What if it was Cedric the Entertainer?
Ooh.
What if it was Regina King? What if it was Regina Hall?
Yeah, a lot of problems I had with it wouldn't exist if it was a black performer voicing that character.
Yeah.
I don't know. We said we weren't going to talk about what we watched this week, and that obviously didn't make my top 10.
Yeah.
I have some thoughts, but I guess I'll keep them to myself for now.
Yeah, I did watch that this week.
Yeah, it just came out.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was a nice Christmas release. So, yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So when I like to watch a philosophical movie, I like to get real down in the weeds, real depressing with it. And my next pick is I'm Thinking of Ending Things.
Nice.
Which I rewatched recently, this past week to just confirm that I made it on this list.
Mm-hmm.
I think my favorite adapted screenplay of the year, I happened to read the book last year, and what Charlie Kaufman did with that adaptation is really interesting, in that he kind of added even more subtext to a really heady story. Mm-hmm. Just one of those movies that's an acting showcase for everyone that's in it. Mm-hmm. Charlie Kaufman really coming into his own as a director. Really all over the place and scattered, and it's confusing. Mm-hmm. And it's like life.
Yeah.
And I mean, I love Toni Collette, so I'll say her name.
Toni Collette. There you go. Just because.
It's on Netflix. Not for everyone. It's on Netflix for everyone, but I'm not recommending it for everyone.
All right. So speaking of Netflix, my next pick is Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. Chadwick is on here twice. He's up here twice. We spoke about this one last week as well. And I'll just say acting. The acting is phenomenal. I could just, you know, study this for the acting. Every single cast member, there was no weak link and there's no small role. And it was just phenomenal to see Viola, you know, just, you know, get another one. You know what I mean? Come on, let's get some more Viola. But it was great to see her get another one and just really like put that weight down on that role, and to see Chadwick just on fire, burning alive in this role. I just want to act again. I'm like, I was watching this and I was just like, put me back on stage. Just after this whole 2020 mess and things get back to normal, put me back on stage, man.
The whole world's a stage.
The whole world's a stage. True, I'm on stage right now. Hello, audience.
Hey, keep that fourth wall up. No, we talk to you, listener. Was that it?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't have a way to segue. First Cow is a 2020 movie by Kelly Reichert. It is, my list is unranked, but this is towards the top. It's the other movie I was referencing when I was talking about Bacurau, in that it takes some Western tropes, even less so than Bacurau, but I guess like the setting. You know what it is? Mm-hmm. There's characters in First Cow that would be right at home in The Revenant, but mm-hmm. they're not the main characters. Mm. They're like off to the side. It's like, look at these assholes. Now let's spend time with like the two most gentlest, like loving friends mm-hmm. / bakers. And there's a cow there too, sure.
Sure.
Just the way the story unfolds is really patient and rewarding, mm-hmm. and just it is a very good 2020 movie, in that it's just like, yeah, this country, like, before it was even its own country, like, we've been so fucked and the priorities are so off, and this is why we can't have good things.
Right.
First Cow.
Where is it streaming? Is it streaming anywhere, or do you have to like buy it or rent it?
I think it's on Showtime.
Okay. All right. Next on my list, in no order, is one of the small acts films. Just one of them.
The only one you saw, right?
The only one I saw.
Yeah.
And it's Lovers Rock. A lot of these movies, films on my list, they have so much to do with music. And just like, thank you, music, for being music, because you really got me through a tough year and some tough spots. And it was just nice that December especially was very, very, very musical and very jazzy at that, very live instrumentation. Lovers Rock, you recommended it to me. I said this before on the podcast. It was a real treat because I didn't know what to expect, and it pretty much stayed in one room for the whole picture. And this has been a year of isolation, And so just to see people on stage just like fraternizing, being close and dancing, it actually didn't make me uncomfortable. A lot of times now when I see a lot of group scenes, I just be like, oh my God, no, I can't do that. That would be awful. But this one, I was just like, yeah, I want to party and I want to dance and I want to have a good time and I want to be close to people and I want to like dance close to someone and then I want to get real rowdy and I want to like pump my fist and I want to kick and I want to crawl on the floor. I don't know. I just, you know, I want to act up on the dance floor. And it was just like really thrilling to watch it, you know, and it was just thrilling because you didn't know what was going to happen. You didn't know if a fight was going to break out. You didn't know anything. And it was just beautiful to watch it all unfold on that dance floor. Well, for the most part.
Yeah. Okay. That segues into my next one. Cause I cheated y'all.
It's a cheat.
My next one is just Small Axe, which is, 5 films.
It's all of them.
Yeah, Steve McQueen directed 5 movies.
Yeah, talk about Steve.
All under this umbrella of the Small Axe anthology series, where he focused on the West Indian community of London from, what was it, like 69 to 83. Mm-hmm. So very rooted in a place and time. And a couple of them are true stories with actors portraying real people, and a couple of them are not. Like, I'm sure parties like Lover's Rock happened, but yeah. I don't think that was, like, these are the events of this day.
Yeah.
But it's just, I couldn't say, I watched the last one today, and that, I guess that one is called Education, and the first two, Mangrove and Lover's Rock, are the standouts, but the other two are very good as well. Mm-hmm. And the way that like certain things from one of them will inform parts of a later movie, like, I don't know, I can't separate them.
Okay.
Because I watched all of them and because this incredible achievement that, I don't know.
And just an interesting way to put out your movies is kind of like a movie miniseries.
Yeah. It's hard to discuss. Just like different genres for each episode and different sides of the West Indian community in London. And it's just a real storied history and a community that has gone through a bunch of shit and haven't until now had their stories told.
Right.
And Steve McQueen was like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I got you.
I got you.
He's just one of the best filmmakers. I mean, we did Widows on the podcast. We love that. I think that's one of the most underrated movies of the last decade.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
No one talks about Widows. They should. Small Axe.
Small Axe.
I'm counting it as one because I wanted to have the 40-year-old version on my list because I wanted to include The Assistant. Right. So I couldn't separate them because then it would just be most of my list.
Yeah, it would be half your list. All right, this is my last one. I'm gonna wrap this up. I watched this today. The Invisible Man. Mm-hmm. Wow. Very thrilling. Very good. I have to show you. Well, I have to show you this, but I also have to. We have to watch Upgrade because there are things that Upgrade did that I've never seen before. That I saw in this.
Yeah, same director.
Same director?
Lee Whannell, who started as a screenwriter.
Oh.
He wrote the first Saw.
That makes sense. Because I was just like, the camera's like doing that movement. The way he like moves the camera, the way he follows action is really interesting. Okay, that makes sense. Hmm. And yeah, it was just a great scary movie. I don't think we got a lot of scary movies this year. I mean, we didn't get a lot of movies this year, period. But this one came out like earlier in the year. And what's her name? Elizabeth Moss can act her way out of a box. She's just like really good in like this really just like this like battered woman role, but not
that's her specialty,
but not weak and not afraid to fight. And it was a good fight to watch. And the way that they like took the idea of like the universal monster of the Invisible Man, and then they like separated from Universal and brought it into like modern age tech. It was really cool.
Cool.
Yeah.
I was planning on ending with Small Axe just because that was like the best thing of the year.
Mm-hmm.
But I have one more.
Okay.
So it's kind of ending on a thud with an 80-minute documentary. Sorry. Sorry to be that guy. You can find it on Amazon Prime. It's called Time. It follows, what is it, like 20 years in the life of Fox Rich, who was a, she was arrested with her husband for a robbery, and she only served, I saw this a while ago, so I don't have the figures fresh on my mind. She served a much shorter sentence than her husband. And she, once she got out, she had raised a family. She then got very active in the prison abolition movement.
Mm-hmm.
And this documentary follows through all that time. The conceit is we're gonna show Dad what he's been missing so he can get out and watch this. That's like the premise. But what you get is just this time spanning. It's all done in black and white, and there's like this piano score, and it's not like annoying. It's not an information heavy documentary by any means. It's just about feeling and just the loss of having a loved one stuck in that system, in the prison system. And just all the emotions dealing with, there's this one scene where she's on the phone trying to get like the next court date. And like the person on the other end of the phone has absolutely no empathy for her.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, she has to put on this cheery face to interact, and then she's put on hold, and then she can like lash out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what the fuck? It feels weird to say this because it's a documentary, but her performance in it is just amazing. I mean, it's real.
It's real, yeah.
It's real, but as I said, the whole world's a stage, and you see her in these different modes. When she's with her children, when she's with her activist groups, just an incredible woman and a super moving picture.
What's it called again?
Moving pictures. It's called Time.
Time. Is that the black and white cover with the two?
Yeah.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. I know what that is.
So that's 10. I also have 10 more I'd like to honorably mention.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm just going to run down this list. Another Round, Bad Education, Borat subsequent movie film, Boys State, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, Palm Springs, Shirley, Sound of Metal, Sylvie's Love, and World of Tomorrow, Episode 3, The Absent Dimensions of David Prime. Or is it Destinations? I forget.
Okay.
That's a short film.
I guess I'll give an honorable mention to some you named, like Sylvie's Love and Palm Springs, which you showed me, which was really nice and really funny. And I'm thinking of Ending Things.
Mm-hmm.
As well, that almost made my top 10.
Yeah, if you didn't fall asleep when we tried to rewatch it. Remember when we promised our listeners, we'll get back to you in a couple weeks so we can talk about it without spoiling.
True.
Sorry. Maybe we'll cover it this year on the podcast.
Yeah.
Who knows?
And just a quick, there are a lot of movies we haven't seen that are 2020 again. I really wanted to see Minari.
Yeah.
Couldn't see Minari. Yeah. Not happening soon.
We didn't attend the right festivals.
Nope. Nomads. Not happening.
Nomadland.
Not happening. I'm not going to see it. Even though a lot of people have. So, you know. I guess you could look forward to us talking about those next year, within the new year.
This year. We're recording this on December 30th. Yeah. We usually record the day before they come out, but we want to celebrate New Year's.
We don't want to work on New Year's Eve.
Yeah. But you're hearing this in 2021, so we made it.
Yes.
And I'm sure everything is great now.
Everything's perfect.
Now that it's on a new calendar. Okay.
Yeah.
Next week, we'll talk about some of the stuff we watched. Maybe I'll remember to complain about Soul. Beautiful movie.
Yes.
Beautiful movie. Very frustrating to me.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow. Let's play that trailer for Mandy.
Under the crimson, primordial sky, the wretched warlock reached into the dark embrace. His fist closed around the serpent's eye. Strange and eternal.
I need you to get me that girl I saw. Do you know what to do?
Special one, Mandy. I too am a special one. Let us be so very special together.
So what are you gonna do with that thing?
I'm going hunting.
So what you hunting?
Crazy evil!
You think you're so in love? I'll show you love.
Oh man, they wronged you. You exude the cosmic darkness.
Glowed from within, strange and eternal.
Mandy is a 2018 psychedelic action horror picture directed by Panos Cosmatos.
Cosmatos.
He co-wrote it also.
Mm-hmm.
Nicolas Cage stars in it.
Yes.
Elijah Wood produced it.
Good old Nick.
So yeah, as you alluded to, I guess, in the beginning of this podcast, this month we picked movies we haven't seen before.
Yeah.
So everything's gonna be new for us.
Yeah.
Definitely running the risk. I kind of hope that there's a week that there's a movie that we both are like, fuck this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's going to happen based on our choices.
Yeah.
But that'd be fun.
It'd be fun.
Maybe if it doesn't happen next month, I'll pick a shitty movie on purpose.
At the very beginning of this movie, I was just like, yo, what if this is not good? Like, what if this is like, we hate this? And we're going to talk about it anyway.
Yeah.
Because that's the what we decided to do.
We both really fucked with this, though.
Yeah, very heavily.
Yeah.
I knew that this was your idea. Well, you said, when we came up with the five this week,
this was like...
Yeah, you was like, let's do Mandy. And I was like, sure, because Mandy has been on our watch list since...
It was one of the first movies we wrote down when we moved in together.
Yeah.
Movies to watch together.
Yeah. It's on the paper list, guys.
Yeah.
And so I was just like, yeah, because we're finally going to get to it. Finally, let's do it. Let's watch it. You know what I mean? And then that's when I got the idea to build the month around that idea of doing stuff we've never seen before.
That's some revisionist history. I don't think that's the order that happened.
Oh, maybe. But yeah, I had a feeling that this was going to be batshit crazy. I hadn't seen much. Like, this was not spoiled for me. The only thing I saw from it was an image of a very bloody Nicolas Cage smiling, like that last image we get of him. I saw that and I was just like, ooh, what is Mandy? How do we get to this point?
That's interesting, because the only thing I knew was Nicolas Cage's very first line. Which is that knock-knock joke that we'll get to in a second.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is why my quote at the beginning was the joke from Pulp Fiction. I couldn't find a knock-knock joke in a movie. I mean, this is definitely the best cinematic knock-knock joke.
And it's
so fucking weird.
And it's terrible.
Okay, so Mandy starts with an epigraph.
Mm-hmm.
Epitaph?
Hmm.
I forget which one it is. It starts with a quote.
Yes.
When I die, bury me deep. Lay two speakers at my feet, wrap some headphones around my head, rock and roll me when I'm dead. It's a mood.
Yeah, it's a mood.
It's a mood.
Yeah.
This movie's very metal.
Very rock and roll. It's like a rock and roll fantasy. Yeah.
Yeah. And we hear the opening guitar licks to Starless by King Crimson, which they use as, is credited in the beginning as like the theme song for Mandy.
Nice.
King
Crimson. They're awesome.
Yeah, a lot of crimson in this movie. All right, let's begin.
Yeah, let's begin.
Right? Nicolas Cage plays a character named Red.
Yeah.
And in a movie full of the color red.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing we see of him is he's got a chainsaw.
Yeah.
And he's logging.
Yeah, he's a tree chopper. He chops down the trees.
Jacking that lumber.
Mm-hmm. We see him turn down a beer.
Mm-hmm.
Not important now.
No, it's an important character detail.
Yeah.
This guy turns down drinks.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't actually notice that the first time we watched this.
Me neither. Yeah, definitely. So I like, oh, yeah. Okay, so that explains it.
We see Mandy
mm-hmm.
illustrating. She's an artist, does like fantasy style art.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I guess we should talk about like the editing, right? Because it's not, we're not cutting between scenes. Everything's fading into itself.
Yeah.
It's
all fades.
This is like one of those style over substance movies.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe we can find some substance in it, but just so stylized.
Mm-hmm.
So I think most of this podcast, I mean, there's some plot, but I think we're just going to be talking about the stylistic elements.
Yeah, the visuals of it. It's very visual heavy. And it's so good that you don't care like why is it so red? Why is it red? This red and they're outside. Why? But it looks very nice, and it like it moves the story along. It moves the picture along very well.
Yeah, we see Red.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just gonna call him Nick Cage.
Nick Cage,
probably. Also alternate between Cage and Red. So Cage is driving home. And I initially thought it was a Jimmy Carter speech for that time era. It doesn't line up. And when I watched it today with subtitles, I saw it was indeed a Ronald Reagan speech.
Oh.
That's playing on the radio because this movie's set in the 80s.
It looks very 80s.
Yeah, Reagan's like complaining about people not being Christian conservatives.
Not having traditional values anymore.
And Red turns it off. Mm-hmm. And then we get our title text.
These titles
text. Which isn't the title of the movie, but the first
chapter? Part
of it. Yeah. The Shadow Mountains, 1983 AD.
Mm-hmm. And like this
thing. I guess it's a location card.
Yeah.
Kind of. Because that's where they are, I guess.
Yeah. And it's in like this majestic blue, very sprinkly and shiny and very, it sets the tone.
It's like just what like that this kid with the long hair used to design on his like Trapper Keeper when you were in school. It's very metal.
You're thinking of someone very specific?
No, I actually wasn't.
Okay.
I was thinking of just the archetype. I found the date, how they wrote it, 1983 AD, I found that very amusing. Mm-hmm. Just
because like people AD,
don't,
BC
and people
like
don't say that unless you're talking about something from like the first 1,000 years after Dominion? I don't know, Latin.
Mm-hmm.
Then he gets home. And this is his first line. The only thing I knew about this movie is he comes in, he says, knock, knock.
Yeah.
And then, like, it's a thing, like, where you enter a door and you say knock, knock, as if to say, I'm here.
Yeah.
But then Mandy turns around and he says, knock, knock.
Yeah.
Because it's a joke.
Who's there? Eric Estrada. Eric Estrada who? Eric Estrada. Eric Estrada from Chips. That's the joke.
That's the joke.
That's the joke.
Eric Estrada was indeed on the TV show Chips.
Yes. Mandy, as we said, is an artist, and so he is looking at her work, and he is very amazed by it. Mm-hmm. Like, he's kind of speechless.
He's a big fan.
Yes.
We get some pillow talk.
Mm-hmm. And blue lighting.
Yeah, these colors are just fading in and out. Mm-hmm. Heavy blue, heavy red. They're talking about planets.
Yeah, it's what's all, their it's favorite all very planets. Cosmic.
Mandy's favorite is Jupiter because it rages.
The storm.
The storm rages on and it could swallow Earth.
Pretty cool. I love that about Jupiter too, is that it's just this constant storm that's going on. And it has like winds up to like 400 miles per hour that would just like just wipe us out. It would just like annihilate everything that we build. And I think that's really cool. And also there's like, it's just like a gas planet pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah. And his favorite planet is Jupiter.
No. We just said Jupiter. Saturn.
Oh, Saturn. Yes.
Which I think would probably be like most people's favorite just because of the rings.
Because of the rings,
yeah. The rings are fun.
It looks nice, too.
And Mandy says it's a good one. It was the first one humans discovered.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of cool ancient myths about it. Mm-hmm. That she brings up cool ancient myths because that's definitely something that's on this movie's mind.
Mm-hmm.
But Red takes it back. He says, actually, my favorite planet is Galactus.
And she's like, Galactus is not a planet.
Who is a character from Marvel Comics.
Mm-hmm. Galactus. He eats planets. He
eats planets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he wants to eat her.
I could see Nick Cage playing Galactus in the MCU.
Yeah.
And we get to see outside. We get to see how many windows their cabin has. It's like, I've heard of a log cabin. This is a glass cabin.
Yeah. Like, their bedroom is just glass.
Yeah. And just so many stars in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
It's a trippy movie, folks.
Mm-hmm.
Because then they're in a boat on the lake. And it's like this shot from above. And it's just...
Yeah, this very wide shot.
It's... Yeah.
And then that shot fades to fire. Just like this very red fire, and then like almost animated fire, and then it goes into real fire. Mm-hmm. Because now it's nighttime and Red is sitting by the fire and Mandy comes out of the water. I believe she's naked. We don't see her naked. We just see her from like the shoulder up. And
she could be wearing a tube top.
She could be wearing a tube top. But he cannot take his eyes off her. And neither can I, honestly.
He's like looking at her through the flames.
Yeah, through the flame. Yeah, she's kind of like on fire. And she just has these eyes. Like, she has, like, a very interesting face, and she has this very wide,
dark eyes. She looks like Wendy from The Shining.
Mm-hmm.
Shelley Duvall.
Yeah, she does. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah, I was just, like, sucked in at that point of being like, ooh, okay, so they're going to do something very interesting here.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, she goes to sleep. She wakes up. Right? She wakes up and it's daytime. I can't tell if this is a dream sequence or not.
No, I think all the dream sequences are animated.
Okay.
We'll get to that.
Yes.
She's walking through the forest. I wrote in my notes, she's walking through the album artwork for Thundercats, The Beyond / Where the Giants Roam.
Yeah. Because
that's what it looks like with the sun coming through the trees and it's all very green. And I don't know how much of the budget they spent on fog machines for this movie, but it was probably a lot.
Yeah. Worth it.
And she hears this animal crying and she follows the sounds and it's this dead baby deer, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Old Bambi. Dead. Mm. And she is very empathetic and she starts to cry over it.
Yeah. What she doesn't do is go on a huge, like, revenge mission to find who did this. we're back inside. Mm-hmm. This is all moving. Actually, it's not moving that quickly. It's kind of slow paced start.
Yeah.
Actually, but it's all like all these sequences just bleed in and out of each other.
Mm-hmm.
Because the next thing is Mandy's waking Red up from a dream.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't remember what he was dreaming about.
Yeah,
But then she's got some memories to share.
Yeah, the story about her dad and this lesson that he wanted to teach her and I don't know, her siblings or a few other young kids. And he was going to teach them how to kill starlings, little starlings.
Baby starlings,
which pretty much you just bash them with a crowbar.
Yeah, he had a pillowcase and a crowbar and some dead starlings inside the pillowcase. And he said, we're going to take turns. I'll show you how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
When it was Mandy's turn, she ran away.
Yeah, she couldn't do it.
Yeah, so not just based on that one story, it didn't seem like she had a great childhood or relationship with her father.
Mm-hmm. So in the next scene, Mandy's reading this book.
Seeker of the Serpent's Kiss.
Yes, this fantasy novel. And pretty much, what is she saying? Did you write it down, what she's saying?
No, she's just reading a passage from it.
Yeah.
I didn't write it down.
Okay.
But I did note that the audio, like, of her voice, it's, like, doubled. And, like, it's her normal voice, but then also, like, her voice pitched down and heavily distorted behind it. So it seems like almost like she's, like, summoning a spirit or something. I don't know. And I just like that she uses a $1 bill as a bookmark.
Yeah. So in the next scene, Mandy goes for a walk and then everything turns, intensely red,
mm-hmm.
Very red,
blood red.
And she's walking down this dirt road and a car passes her and she looks inside.
Hey, it's a van.
It's a van. She looks inside the van and then the people inside the van look back at her. One guy's specifically.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know who he is yet.
Yeah, and this is the first scene that doesn't, like, bleed right into the next one. It actually ends on a freeze frame.
Yeah.
With Mandy, like, right on the edge of the frame, like, looking back.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of gave me, like, a missing persons poster vibe.
Yes. Very that.
And then we have another title card.
Mm-hmm.
Children of the New Dawn.
And this one's in red.
Yeah, where we're going to get to learn about the occupants of the van.
Mm-hmm. We meet Jeremiah as a woman tries to comfort him. This woman's name is Mother Marlene. And she is trying to comfort him, trying to please him. But he is very annoyed with her. There's nothing that she could do because he wants Mandy. He feels naked without her, and he just has to have her. And so he dismisses Mother, and he calls in
Brother Swan.
Brother Swan.
But before that, just in the conversation with Mother Marley, mm-hmm. This guy, I didn't look up his name. He knows he's in a movie opposite Nicolas Cage. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate the way he tuned his performance to, like, he does some of the Nicolas Cage plays. Mm-hmm. Not that I've necessarily seen Nick Cage do this, but, like, right in this first scene, he has to say the word please, but he does it for, like, 10 seconds, and with this vocal fresh, it was like, please.
Yeah.
Very unique line reading. Mm-hmm. I was reading the IMDb trivia for this. Panos Cosmatos, the writer-director, originally wanted Nicolas Cage for this role of Jeremiah Sand.
Okay.
And Nick Cage wanted to be Red.
Okay.
And it actually took a while for them to come to the agreement and kind of rework the story for... Because he, like, originally saw Red as, like, a much younger guy.
Oh, okay.
He wanted it to be, like, youth.
Oh.
But
I think Nick Cage was perfect as Red. And I love how grounded he starts in this. Because otherwise, it would have been just Nicolas Cage being, you know, that... What we expect of Nicolas Cage.
Well,
and it starts with him being very grounded.
There's some strategy with it. Like, they don't show it. I feel like if he had one more scene, he wouldn't be able to keep up the groundedness.
Yes.
He's not in a lot of it yet.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Brother Swan is called in by Jeremiah to kidnap Mandy.
Yeah.
Jeremiah thinks she's beautiful.
Yeah.
And wants her to join the cult.
Yeah.
The Children of the New Dawn.
Mm-hmm. And he gives her, him, this rock. It kind of looks like an asteroid rock.
It's an ocarina, right?
Ocarina. Gives him an ocarina. And when he gives it to him, the screen turns green and it's like flashing green.
Yeah,
very, and it looks very like extraterrestrial almost. And he's like, you know what to do. And also, they're going to sacrifice one of their cult members.
Yeah, so the plan is, here's this shell or this ocarina that you're going to blow, and they'll summon the black skulls.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to sacrifice one of our own to the Black Skulls so they'll do our dirty work of kidnapping Mandy.
Yeah.
Mandy works at a general store. You get to see her at work, hanging out, reading more of her book.
Yep.
When in comes Mother Marlene.
Yeah.
To ask some personal questions.
Get some information.
You find out that they live on Crystal Lake, which fans of the Friday the 13th series will, their ears will perk up at that.
Yeah.
Nice reference.
Mm-hmm. Gave her too much information, honestly.
Yeah, then you get a very ominous see you later.
Yeah.
Not like that, like see you later.
See you later. So in the next scene, the servants, I suppose they are, they go out. And Brother Swan goes out and he blows on the ocarina.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting, like whistle horn sound that echoes out into the woods.
Yeah, you expect something to happen right there.
Yeah.
But
he has to do it twice.
He does it twice and then he gets back in the van. And then there's just like some downtime.
Yeah.
And the guy in the passenger seat is like just playing with the automatic window.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what year they came out, but it was probably like a new thing.
Mm-hmm.
So just having some fun with the button.
Very funny bit.
But then the Black Skulls come in.
Mm-hmm. On their dirt bikes and four-wheelers.
Yeah, the motors running, these bright lights, and mm-hmm. the red smoke.
Mm-hmm. And they look like they're straight out of the movie Hellraiser.
Mm.
Right? And then when I was on Letterboxd, I, for some reason, just started clicking on the producers. And one of the producers was a producer on the original Hellraiser and on the second one as well. So I was like, okay, so like that's where that like that tie-in is, because it felt very Hellraiser.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the whole movie is definitely '80s, it's like a homage or a pastiche, I guess.
Blood for blood. You know, they need blood to take blood.
So they get some blood. They get the sacrifice. So then they're good to go. They're good to go to Crystal Lake. Break into the glass cabin.
Red and Mandy are in the house watching a very sci-fi movie. I don't know what it is, but this guy is shooting people and zapping them away. And then it gets really blue as they sleep in their window, very, very window heavy bedroom. And then that turns into like electrical flicking. We also hear electrical noises as it's happening.
Yeah, so strobe light home invasion.
And they are taken. And they don't have a chance to fight at all. We see one of the cult members get taken and like back into like fog. He's sacrificed. He's taken. And Red is knocked out. I suppose that Mandy is knocked out too, because when she comes to, she is tied up in a chair surrounded by Sister Lucy and Mother Marlene.
Yeah, and they drug her. Get some LSD in the eyeballs. And
freaking
the black wasp venom in the neck.
The sensation of that must be crazy. She called it the cherry on top.
Go get this like close up on Mandy after just that fucked up shit happening to her, and then it does this cool fade from like the close up of her face to then the shot of Mother Marlene and Sister Lucy on like either side of her holding her. And it's like their heads were where Mandy's eyes were. And Mandy's like where her nose was, because she's like not standing fully upright. They have to kind of like drag her a little. It's a very,
very good,
very good fade.
And also it's like the space in between where Mandy is in the middle and where they're like supporting her also kind of look like tears falling down her eyes in that fade. There's like so much like happening in that fade that it just makes it look really interesting.
Yeah, so now that Mandy's drugged, I mean, already very trippy imagery, but now they like crank it up a notch with having like the blurs, I guess.
Yeah, it's like a slur, like she's like, it's almost like slow-mo, but it's not.
It's like the image kind of like trails when there's movement. It's very Donnie Darko kind of.
So the picture is very red, and then the lag is blue. So you get like this red and blue effect that's happening.
Yeah, and this is her being presented to Jeremiah Sand.
Jeremiah makes his introduction, and he asks her, "What do you see?" And she says, "I see the Reaper fast approaching." He's like, "You recognize me, and I'm hoping in time you'll recognize me." I recognize you, and I'm hoping in time you'll recognize me. And so he plays this song.
He puts on his own record. He's a very Manson-esque figure. He's got his psychedelic folk music. And he's got this whole speech about, well, first of all, he wants her to listen to the whole song before she says how she likes it. Before she says anything. And while he's playing the song, he's got a monologue about, "Well, I spoke to God and he told me that I'm one with everything, so everything's mine. I can take anything I want."
Yes.
"And I want you."
And it's also very Silence of the Lambs. He has this robe on. And he disrobes himself, and he's naked underneath. Oh, am I skipping ahead?
You're skipping like my favorite visual.
Oh, okay, yeah. Talk flourish. About it. You're right.
We have a close up on Jeremiah's face, just fully red, just only red light, as he's going on and on about how he's an extension of God and the world, and he can take anything he wants, and it keeps fading to a close-up of Mandy's face, but it's very subtle in, like, a way where their faces at, like, certain points are superimposed on each other, because it's, like, a very slow fade, and it goes back and forth, and it's, like, rather than cutting back and forth between the person speaking and the person listening, we're just fading in between them, mm-hmm. and it's pretty disturbing.
Yeah. Very interesting way to, like, show her face while he's talking.
Yeah.
On his face, pretty much.
And then he gets up and derobes, and that's when it goes, like, even more slow motion for the derobe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, there's Jeremiah's tiny dick.
Yep. And he's touching himself, and he's talking about how sensitive he is, and be sensitive with me, and you're a special lady, and let's be special together. And she's just like, did you write this song?
About yourself?
About yourself? And he goes, yeah. And she starts laughing at him,
mm-hmm.
to my amusement.
Yeah.
Because, like, yeah.
Because fuck that guy.
Fuck that guy. and so she's laughing uncontrollably.
Actually, he can fuck himself, which is what he does.
Yeah.
When she starts laughing at him.
Yeah. Yeah, he tries to, like, jerk off, and it's just not happening for him. So now he's embarrassed because his lackeys are watching him and watching this woman laugh at him as he's naked. And so he's just like, don't look at me. Don't look at me. And so they're all, like, turning away. Mm-hmm. And he is just, like, raging. He's just freaking out. And she's just laughing at him. Just laughing in his face.
Yeah, so he's looking at his reflection.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something I love. Talking to himself. He says, like, 6 or 7 times, tell me what to do, tell me what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Until he finally has a moment of silence. And then his face completely changes. And he says, don't ever doubt yourself.
Mm-hmm.
He should have doubted himself.
Yeah, just a little bit, because I knew that's where it was going.
Just a lot.
Yeah.
That guy needs less confidence in general.
Mm-hmm. Red is tied up, and so Jeremiah comes out with Brother Swan and Sister Lucy.
He's, like, crucified.
Yeah.
Actually, no, his
hands are together.
They're together up top.
But it's, like, barbed, like, wire.
Barbed wire, and he's also, like, bound and gagged with barbed wire.
In his mouth.
Yes, it's intense. Are you still listening to this episode, Mom?
So he comes out and he's just like, you think you and that whore and love, let me show you what real love looks like. And so he has Sister Lucy, who, if you're paying attention to her, it's very timid and also very pregnant. Hmm. Kneel down before Red and play Russian roulette.
Yeah. Jeremiah loads one in the chamber, spins it, and, she pulls the trigger, and that's when the music stops,
mm-hmm.
when it comes up blank.
Yeah.
And I guess she loves him a lot. And this gives me a moment to just talk about the music.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we talked about all the visuals, but the score is really important to the vibe of the movie, which is very metal, but the score isn't... I don't know. I don't listen to a lot of metal. I guess it's metal, right? Just mm-hmm. not heavy metal?
Yeah.
Okay. It's metal, then. It's just very atmospheric, moody. I talked a couple weeks ago about that movie, Mary Magdalene, and one of the only things I liked about it was the score. And it's that guy, Johan Johansson,
mm-hmm.
Who unfortunately died a couple years ago, only got to do a couple movies. He would have been the next Hans Zimmer or John Williams.
Yeah.
It's a shame, but he did some very good work in this movie. So, now, Jeremiah's gonna take out the tainted blade of the Pale Knight.
Yes, there you go. This is just fancy looking blade that looked like it came out of a freaking Predator movie.
Yeah. And he stabs Red.
Mm-hmm. He said Jesus messed up by not making a sacrifice. The crucifixion is proof of that. And so he's going to sacrifice Mandy.
Right in front of Red.
Mm-hmm. Gonna purify her by fire. And it's really, really fucked up because it happens. He, in a bag too, puts her in a bag. They string her up and they throw gasoline on the bag and then they light it on fire. And we get to watch as Mandy struggles in that flaming bag until she doesn't struggle anymore. And Red is helpless because he is bound and gagged and can't do anything.
Yeah, we get some close-up reactions of all the cult members and Red experiencing this.
Yeah.
One of the guys, I don't know his name, but he's the one in the chainsaw duel later.
Yeah.
giving me very strong Willem Dafoe vibes with his like bug eyes and his tongue like sticking out. We do see Sister Lucy's the only one that doesn't seem thrilled.
Yeah. She has a bit of
everyone else morality. Everyone else thrilling. Completely thrilled.
Yeah.
Not Red, obviously. And yeah. Once she's burnt, they leave.
Yeah.
They leave Red up there. They should have killed him.
They should have.
If I was in that cult.
I guess they figured that he wouldn't be able to escape out of the barbed wire and that he would just bleed out from the wound. But that's not what happens. He's able to slowly and painfully get his hand out of the wire and ungag himself.
The first time we watched this, it was on our projector. And this is, I mean, just very bright, colorful movie, but like high contrast. So we didn't, I don't know, there's some parts of the image that we weren't really seeing.
Yeah.
I thought fingers came off the first time I watched this. That's why I said out loud, how many did he lose?
Oh, okay.
But I rewatched it on my computer monitor and saw, no, he is just bloody, but he was able to slip his fingers out.
Mm-hmm. And so he crawls over to Mandy's ashes, and we can see like this cast of her face and ashes. And we just
part's...
We just watch as like her face just blows away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's an image. Red crawls home, crawls inside.
Yeah.
This
is a great part.
He's got, what's he wearing? It's a like one of those baseball three-quarter tees.
Yeah.
It's a black tee with orange sleeves, and it's got tiger in the middle.
Yeah, it has a tiger.
And he's pantsless, and he's wearing whitey tighties.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets home just in time for the Cheddar Goblin commercial.
Cheddar Goblin! Cheddar Goblin is on TV. I was like, is this real? Is this a real commercial? But it's not.
No. Definitely not.
It's crazy.
It's like a Kraft macaroni and cheese.
Yeah, it's like, thing. At first I was like, is it Kraft? But it's not Kraft.
No, it's Cheddar Goblin.
Yeah.
This was, the commercial was directed by Casper Kelly, who's... if you're an Adult Swim watcher, you might know his work from Too Many Cooks or Your Pretty Face is Going to Hell.
Awesome. It's very Adult Swim.
Yeah.
It's very like that. It's just like this goblin throwing up macaroni and cheese on kids.
Yeah, I really appreciated the comic relief. But also, it's just like this real fucked up shit happened to him and now he comes home and it's just like...
Cheddar Goblin?
Commercials.
Yeah.
Just like fucked up commercials, but it's like fun.
Yeah.
But there's like actual monsters out there, but well, these kids are just eating the goblin cheese.
Yeah.
Goblin cheddar.
And so he goes to bed and he just knocks out. He's exhausted. He goes to bed. And this is where we get our first animated dream sequence.
Yeah, I wish I dreamt in anime like Red.
Except these are nightmares.
Yeah, but they're cool looking. Oh, I'm going to regret that. I'm going to have like a really fucked up nightmare soon. And we'll be like, damn, I put that in the universe.
Yeah.
So he sees Mandy from behind. And then her hair is blowing in the wind. And there's like this cosmic background. And she turns around and her face is like melting and she's like already decomposed.
Yeah, there's like maggots in her face. She's a zombie, pretty much. And he wakes up from that nightmare and he goes to the bathroom. He stumbles around a bit and then he grabs a bottle of like vodka
from his the bottom of his bathroom cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad you pointed out that he turned down the beer, because when we watched this the first time, I had a feeling because of the placement of the alcohol and also the way he proceeds to just scream and drink right from the bottle that he's a alcoholic.
Yeah.
That was in recovery, but is now relapsing.
Yep. He's relaxing. He's breaking his sobriety. He's going through so much. He's drinking. He's yelling. He's drinking. He's yelling. He's drinking. He's yelling.
This, like, so far is, like, the most clear image of the movie. The shot, like, the camera stays still for, like, a full minute while it's just Nicolas Cage in this room acting mm-hmm. with a capital A and a capital K-ting mm-hmm. as well.
You called him a loud actor, and he's so accurate.
He just makes his... He never disappears into a role.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of those actors where you watch him and you're just... He makes you constantly aware that it's Nicolas Cage in a movie, which, when used well, can be great. And in Mandy, it's used very well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very great. He's all over the place in this scene.
Yeah, and rightfully so. So in the next scene, Red pays a visit to his old friend, Crothers.
Yeah.
Played by Bill Duke. And he's coming for the Reaper, which is a crossbow.
Yeah, his crossbow has a name,
mm-hmm.
and that name is the Reaper.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed Crothers is living in a trailer. In the background, when Red's there, you see that he's got cheddar cobbler.
Oh.
Like in his shelf.
Oh, I didn't even peep.
He's got some boxes of cheddar cobbler.
Nice.
Crothers is his buddy. We don't get barely any background of their relationship, but kind of implied maybe that they were in the army together or mm-hmm. the military mm-hmm. of some sort. They have a past.
Yeah.
That
involves weapons.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because once he gets the Reaper, he offers him more weapons once he finds out that he's going hunting.
Some arrows that he made himself.
Mm-hmm. That shoot through bone.
Yeah.
Like butter. And so he's like...
I think it was like... Fat kids and cake.
Yeah, like fat kids and cake. Mm. And so he's like, who exactly are you hunting? And he's just like, Jesus freaks.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't... I love his reply is, I didn't know they were in season. And so Red just has to explain the situation. Like, they burned her! And it was crazy. And it was these psycho gnarly guys on bikes and... Da, 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 da. And so all of this starts to sound familiar to Crothers. And so he starts to explain exactly what these guys are. And really, he breaks it down until just like they're LSD freaks, pretty much, and they're sadist.
Yeah, the Black Skulls were drug runners that got a bad batch of LSD and have been... murderous maniacs ever since.
Yeah.
And then Red's like, hey, you're not going to... Or Carruthers is like, hey, Red, you're not going to survive this. You got little odds. And then, Nick Cage just says, don't be negative!
Right? Need some positivity here.
Yeah. Yeah, when you heard me laughing, it was definitely me watching Mandy. Because then he got these weapons, he got the information, but that's not enough. He's got to forge a weapon of his own.
Yes.
A battle axe. A
battle axe. I love it.
You see the fire reflected in his aviator sunglasses, because now all of a sudden he's a cool guy.
Mm-hmm. And he can forge weapons.
Yeah.
he has a room where he could forge weapons. I'm not going to ask questions. I'm just going to take it in because it's pretty cool. He builds it and it's just like this metallic, very reflective, heavy metal axe.
Mm-hmm. And then we get, finally, after 75 minutes of movie, the title, Mandy. On screen.
And it is gnarly.
It's in blood, and the blood is dripping.
And it's like in veins. It's like spreading. Mandy is spreading.
To the point where, like, you can't even read that it used to say Mandy, because it's pretty just much all red.
Yeah. Very French of them. So Red is like, he's setting up shop outside. He's going to snipe pretty much with Reaper. And so he's watching the Black Knights, right?
Skulls.
The Black Skulls. He's watching them as they pass by on the roll. He watches the first one go and he lets him go. And then there's a second one. He takes his shot. He knocks him down over. Mm-hmm. So then he gets in his car to like run him over.
Yeah.
And he does more damage to his car.
Mm-hmm.
Because like the one that he hit had like metal all over his body. Like chains and spikes and stuff. So he does more damage to his car than the person probably. He ends up
getting captured.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he has another anime nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
Like this time it's like, she's got like, almost like Medusa hair, but not snakes.
Yeah, it's like she's floating in water or she's floating in space.
Yeah.
And then her eyes open and they're red. Yeah. And then he comes to and he's like handcuffed to a pipe. To a pipe, yeah.
Yeah. And one of the bikers takes a swipe at him, ripping his shirt.
That's my favorite shirt. Which
we learned was his favorite shirt.
Yeah.
It's the shirt that Mandy was wearing in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. 44.
But they ripped it off before they burned her. So Red was able... We see in the scene once he crawls home, he picks up the 44 shirt and is like sniffing it.
Mm-hmm.
So Red... But we're in the John Wick section of the movie, right?
Yeah, it's revenge time.
So he's going to fuck these bikers up now.
Yeah.
He breaks free. And he fucks the bikers up.
Yeah. Hits the first one with the pipe a few times. And then he falls down into like this black hole. We don't see what happens to him. But then he goes up. And now he's in a house.
Yeah.
Right? And one of them is watching porn.
Yeah.
And he's going to pleasure himself. But where his... dick should be is this giant blade.
Hmm.
And so his dick is the blade.
Yeah.
And so Red sneaks up behind him, hits him, but somehow he like tumbles over and the thing, the guy ends up on top of him, almost penetrating him because his blade dick goes into the ground. And
the blood gurgle though.
Yeah, Red has a box cutter. He went from a battle axe to a box cutter.
Yeah.
He has this box cutter, and so he pretty much slits his throat, and then it's just like there's like a profuse amount of blood that gets all over his face.
Yeah.
And gives him that look that he will carry throughout the rest of the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, other movies when the hero gets a little bloody, like, they'll have, like, a little scratch or something, or it'll be, like, for a scene.
Mm-hmm.
But this is, like, no, he's...
This is his war blood paint.
Covered. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. The third biker comes in with a gun, tries to shoot Red, but ends up shooting the porn.
Mm-hmm.
He shoots the television set. I guess Red recognizes him from when he first woke up, because he says, "You ripped my shirt."
Yeah, it's the one that from earlier.
And then he does this move where he snaps the guy's neck.
Yeah.
In almost like a ta-da.
Yeah. Movement.
It's like a very fluid gesture that he has, like a face he makes afterwards, where he's almost like a magician revealing his trick.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the trick is, I have a special set of skills, right?
Yes. Yes. Say it.
So now he's left alone. I mean, with the corpses, I guess.
Mm-hmm. They live like pigs, by the way. The design of their department is just like, takeout is just everywhere. Dirty dishes everywhere. He does.
I feel like if you're on like a shitload of bad acid, you're not going to take a lot of time out of your day to clean up.
You're right. You're right. So now that they're dead, they have like drugs everywhere
all over his house. A second after he does the ta-da thing, he comes out with like a big pile of cocaine.
Yeah. And just he just sniffs it. Just brings the whole thing up to his nose and just sniffs coke. Now he's on coke. And now he's in the kitchen. He's looking around. And what does he find?
He finds his battle axe.
Mm-hmm.
And then he opens the cabinet. He finds the Reaper, his crossbow. And then he finds a bottle of LSD.
Yeah.
That he puts his pinky finger in.
Just a little bit.
And then he puts his pinky finger up to his tongue. And immediately...
It's face melting.
Yeah.
This like why animation. Would
he
do
the biker gang's LSD that he just heard about from his friend Carruthers about how it made them murderous freaks? I mean, I guess because he wanted to go murder some freaks.
Also, he just did coke. Like, this guy is like drugged out of his mind.
Yeah. He's an intense dude that was sober for so long who lost the one person drinking, in his life.
Coke,
who kept LSD. Him grounded. So now he's just off.
Yeah. Everything goes.
So it's a crazy sequence right when he touches the LSD with his pinky. The face melts.
Mm-hmm.
You see that, like, a radio tower,
mm-hmm.
which is important, weirdly, because that's how he goes to it. He, like, trips and sees a radio tower and then finds it.
Yeah.
And then that ends up being, like, the next part of his quest.
Because
he meets the chemist.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is one more battle scene.
Oh, okay.
Outside.
Oh, yeah, the car?
Yeah, he goes outside and he actually shoots it in the throat, but it's not enough to kill it.
Mm-hmm.
These things like pain and they just have a high tolerance. And so now he gets to use his axe. He gets to fight close combat and he ends up just kicking its ass.
Yeah.
The thing's last word is like, she burns.
While he's
burns,
on fire.
Burns, yeah. And he's just like, shut up. So he chops his head off.
Mm-hmm.
And then he picks up the cigarette, lights the cigarettes with the flaming head and takes a smoke.
Yep.
You can add nicotine to that list of drugs now.
Can't believe I skipped that.
Mm-hmm.
Lighting a cigarette from a flaming decapitated head.
Yeah.
So then he goes to the radio tower.
Mm-hmm.
And he meets the chemist, and he has... No, he doesn't have a cover.
It's kind of, like, telepathic?
I have no idea.
The chemist's, like, really clairvoyant or something, because it's just, like, the chemist is doing the talking, and he's communicating with him, but, yeah, Red is not saying anything. He's just being really intense and really stoic.
And there's a tiger named Lizzie, who's also on LSD, apparently.
Yeah.
Who at one point... The chemist is like, I know what you need. And then he lets the tiger out.
Yeah, he's like, you're right. Bye-bye, Lizzie.
Yeah.
And then he opens the cage, and then Lizzie is free.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's just like, man, they wronged you. Why they gotta be like that?
And he's like, hey, you've got real dark energy.
Yeah. And then he's like, okay, I'll tell you where to go.
Yeah.
And so he has this moment where he looks up and opens his mouth and there's like this weird sound happens. Almost like a call. It's real low. And then he's just like, go north.
Yeah, that's the directions. I'll tell you where to find them. North.
North.
At one point, there's a shot of Red's boots and there's like worms crawling all over them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he looks down on the ground and there's worms on
them. Yeah.
So
he gets on his bike and he goes north.
He goes north. He rides and he finds them, but then he passes out again. Passes out again because we get another dream sequence.
Yeah. Well, I think he was waiting for daytime.
Okay.
Because you get the nightmare and wakes up and now he's going to be staking out, the cult.
Mm-hmm.
They're in like a church that's in a quarry. So Red is at the top of the quarry looking down on the church.
Mm-hmm.
So he's getting his bearings.
Mm-hmm.
And he had, forgot to mention something he took from the biker house was like spikes to slash tires.
Yeah.
I don't know what you call those. You put them on the road to make the tires.
Yeah.
Slash. So he does that when he sees the van leave the quarry. So he gets his opportunity to kill Brother Swan
mm-hmm.
and Brother Hanker.
Mm-hmm. And spares Sister Lucy.
He does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, that's a little later, right? She wasn't in there in that van.
No, she was next to Swan.
Oh. Oh, okay.
He kills him by sticking the blade in his mouth, and she watches, and then he.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
And then he looks at her, and then he just walks away.
Yeah.
And then he throws the axe at Hanker. Hanker's out. Cleaning is easy. And then we get the freaking
chainsaw, right?
Yeah, the chainsaw battle. Oh, so rock and roll.
He picks up this little stubby chainsaw.
Yeah. This is so funny.
And then. The Willem Dafoe looking guy pulls out like a, he's like, mine's bigger.
Mine's bigger.
At that moment.
But like the reveal of it as he's like pulling it out.
Pulls it out and you realize, they're about to fight with chainsaws.
Yes. Yes.
Have you seen that before?
I know. And I'm glad that I did. Amazing.
Yeah, we like chainsaws on this podcast.
Heavy, heavy metal.
This really outdid itself.
Yeah. Dude
with the long chainsaw though doesn't know how to use the long chainsaw to his advantage because he's getting way too close.
He's getting way too close.
You gotta keep your distance if you have a longer weapon. Like that's your advantage, mm-hmm. guy. This was your downfall.
This was it. He knocks, well, they both fall down, like they're mm-hmm. both like knocked down, but the Willem Dafoe guy is able to get to the stubby chainsaw and he's gonna use that. But Nick Cage gets up and he picks up a chains and he like whips it around.
Chains, no saw.
And he whips it around his neck and then he pulls him down.
Yeah.
He falls on top of the bigger chainsaw.
Yep.
And it's just like he's just being cut open.
Yep.
And that was his demise.
Blood is just misting. It's just a mist of blood.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I said there might be substance that we'd find, I was bullshitting.
I feel like the dreams mean something, but I just don't know what they mean. I just can't figure out the meaning. Because the last one we didn't talk about, she reached
and it's like,
she goes inside of a beast and she pulls out this glowing green stone and her eyes turn green. I don't know what it means,
but
it should have meaning. Like, I'm sure it does.
Yeah, I don't know.
But I'm not sure.
Substance I got from this is like when your whole world is one person and that one person's gone.
Yeah.
These men are just gonna fucking go into a pit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's what this is. Watch him go into the pit. Tunnels, actually. Yeah. Now he's in tunnels.
Yeah.
underneath the church. It's kind of like catacombs.
Mm-hmm.
At
the end of the tunnel, he sees, Mother.
Yeah, Mother Marlene, and she's, she knows what's coming, so she's got some defense she's gonna run by talking about how Jeremiah says, I'm the most sensual lover he's ever been with.
Mm-hmm.
I have empathy, I can anticipate my partner's every move.
Yeah. When we first watched it, you called her his mother, and I was like, really? And then I watched it this time with subtitles, and I'm just like, well, if he had sex with her, then she's probably not his mother, unless he had sex with
like
his mother.
Like, her name is Mother Marlene.
Yeah.
And she's like the older woman
in
the cult, and we don't get the back story.
Yeah.
He's a fucked up dude. Like, I wouldn't put him past him.
True. You're right, because if he wants it, it's his, whatever it is.
Yeah. We don't see it happen, but he decapitates her.
Yeah.
Because then he goes to the final boss battle, Jeremiah Sand. Mm-hmm. And he rolls in Mother Marlene's head.
Yeah. And he freaks out. He's just like, ah!
He kicks it away.
He kicks it away.
And then we get the close-up where we see it was her head. Mm-hmm. First time we watched this, I thought maybe Nick Cage was going to fuck Mother Marlene.
Mm-hmm. You did. But no, he just ends her. And so now Jeremiah knows that his life is in danger at this point and has a few tactics mm-hmm. at his disposal. About four. There's about four things he does. It changes. It's pretty
I only wrote down one of them, so.
It's really cool to see, like, this guy act out this scene because it almost felt like different personalities were coming out at this point. So the first one is, like, you can't harm me. I'm above you. That's his first one, is to, like, talk down to him. And you're, like, you're soulless. Mm. You mean nothing. And then it goes into the second one, which is, this is a part of your journey. This is when he has him down. Mm. This is part of your journey to me so that I can help you, right? That's the second one. The third tactic is, I'll suck your dick, man.
That's what I wrote down.
Is that what you want? I'll fucking suck your dick. And then he snaps. Like, he snaps back into, like, I'm the child of God. Mm-hmm. Into, like, I don't kneel before you. You kneel before me. So kneel before me. Right? And now he's angry. And Nick Cage is just like, I'm your God now.
Yeah.
Right? And with...
I also like the line before this. He says... Red says, the psychotic drones, the mystic swims. You're droning, I'm swimming.
Yeah.
And this is a cool line.
And with his bare hands, with his bare LSD coke-fueled strength, he squashes his head.
Yeah.
Just squashes it.
Crushes it, yeah.
Yeah. And
sets the church on fire.
Yeah, as he's walking, there's a burning cross behind him. You get that imagery.
Mm-hmm. And he watches it burn.
Mm-hmm. And then he gets in his car. And it's finally quiet. It's this quiet moment.
You get a flashback
mm-hmm.
to the first time he met Mandy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's wearing that shirt with the numbers 44 on it. So now we have some context to why it was his favorite shirt.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a... kind of annoying, quippy line the first time he said, hey, that's my favorite shirt. And then he's like, you've ripped my shirt.
Yeah.
But then it's like, aw.
Yeah, that's why.
Yeah.
It's the shirt he was wearing when he met Mandy, and it's the shirt she was wearing mm-hmm. that day. And they can't take their eyes off each other. Like, they're both, like, as soon as they looked at each other, it was just like,
yeah, the flashback's wordless. It's just them catching each other's eyes and then intense stares.
And intense colors.
And then the color flushes in, like, yeah, this was...
blue,
this
red,
was their greens. Connection. This was their love. Yeah. Their love for each other enabled them to have this magic in their lives.
Mm-hmm. And even when he's driving, he is looking at her, and she's looking at him.
He sees her in the passenger seat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then it switches to, like, red, and then we look back at his face... and it's his blood-covered face. And then you realize that she's not in the car at all.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes back to his face and he's smiling. He has this like very deranged smile, like that mm-hmm. that frame. And he's just driving off.
And then we zoom out a little bit. We see the landscape behind him and it's like nothing anymore resembles Earth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's almost like the novel she was reading.
Yeah.
Or something like that. It's like you see the like two planets
mm-hmm.
or like maybe two moons in the background. And then the mountains have like that very metal apocalypse vibe to it.
Yeah.
And that's Mandy.
Yeah. The credits are instead of the normal white text over black background, it's red text.
And it's silent. There's no music.
No music. Ends with a dedication to the composer, Johan Johansson,
mm-hmm.
and the final image of some of Mandy's drawings at the end of the credits.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Mandy.
That's Mandy. Hey, Nate, Is Mandy a movie or a film?
It is a midnight movie.
It's a midnight movie. Oh, God. This would be seeing this at midnight in a theater would be amazing.
Yeah. It's wild.
And it's fun, and it's violent, and it's just a good time.
It would be one of my favorite things if it were, like, half an hour shorter. Mm-hmm. then I wouldn't shut up about this movie.
Yeah.
I think it doesn't need to be 2 hours. But it is. Yeah. And I still like it.
I wouldn't know what to cut, because it's, like, so visual happy. Like, heavy. It's just, like, you would be cutting just some of the pretty things to look at. Or maybe some of the segues. Or you would just be cutting down time that way.
Yeah. I don't know. The beginning's very slow. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it kind of pretends to care about Mandy, but it doesn't really.
True.
They're just waiting for there to be a dead girl for motivation for the movie to start.
Yeah, it's named after Mandy, and then Mandy dies, and I was just like, oh no, I didn't want that. That's not what I wanted.
Yeah, where are the movies where a girl goes on a killing rampage because of a dead person?
I guess Kill Bill.
True. True. All right, that's Mandy. Mandy. So you agree it's a movie?
Yeah, I agree. Ooh. Did I not say that?
No, you. I guess you did.
Yeah.
I'm just surprised.
Okay.
Because
style, it's so right?
Stylish. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Usually, I feel like the style pushes you to film. But
yeah.
Nice. So we're going to be back next week with another movie we haven't seen before.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this will be the one where we both end up hating it. I feel like that would be a fun episode. But I hope I like whatever movie we end up watching on. Oh, no, I should say our email first.
Yeah, you should say that.
Email us at moviefilmpod@gmail.com or find us on social at moviefilmpod. We'd love to hear from you. Movie. Film.
You cut my shirt. I'm sorry, I'm saying it terribly. Nicolas Cage is great.